We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account. Hey everyone, you are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. And today we continue to kind of deconstruct some myths and commonly used expressions that can be quite frustrating within the autistic and ADHD spaces. First and foremost, one of my least favorites, everyone is a little bit autistic. And I know mm-hmm. you and I are going to have differing perspectives on this conversation.
Which I kind of like. That's a good thing to model.
It is a good thing to model.
We can be friends and have different perspectives. Has anyone, first of all, I'm curious, has someone said that to your face?
Many times. Even other therapists, I see it in therapist groups sometimes during discussion. I have had people say it directly to me when I've described my autistic experience, almost as if placating it or sympathizing, don't worry, everyone's a little autistic.
Oh, so the idea is don't feel bad about being autistic because everyone's a little autistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start there. That actually be interesting. Let's try to decode the intentions of why people say that.
Yep.
And then also the impact. So I don't want you to feel bad about yourself.
Yep.
And so I'm going to remind you that everyone's a little bit autistic. So you can relate a little bit to the other humans because they're a little bit autistic. Okay.
Or you shouldn't, maybe your struggles that you're describing or your traits that you're describing, you're kind of blowing it out of proportion because everyone kind of experiences,
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's,
which again, what do you think the intention of that comment is?
In that context, I really do think it's just kind of trying to, from their perspective, don't be so hard on yourself or don't act as if these struggles are so significant because everyone has them. It's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost infantilizing in a way of calm down. It's patting your head.
Yeah. So maybe it's their own discomfort with your distress. Mm-hmm. And and so they're wanting to then weave it into all humans experience that, which, okay. And that, I just finished a training on traumatic invalidation and the neurodivergent experience. And it's the literature on traumatic invalidation is fascinating, but there's different degrees of invalidation. And so this is what I think would be the word just left. I had it in my head, but empathic, an empathic miss or an empathic invalidation. That's not the exact word, but it's kind of a level one invalidation where the person likely doesn't mean to invalidate. Oh, empathetic misattunement. That might be it. But because of how it's landing, that can be a very invalidating experience. And we get we tend to get many of these. And then it kind of becomes death by 1,000 splinters. You don't look autistic. Everyone's a little autistic. So these would be empathic misattunements that a lot of us get when we start self-disclosing.
We get them a lot from people who are close to us too.
Yeah.
I think like we've talked about disclosure and you've kind of candidly talked about how you really have to be rooted in it and feel really secure in it to start talking about it openly, because you don't know how disclosure will be received, right? Once it comes out of your mouth or once you type it out, it's not for you to react to.
And then if the responses you're getting is a lot of invalidation, especially if it is a lot of that empathic misattunement, which can be confusing, because it's like, wait, I think this person's trying to be kind to me, but also like by saying things like, you don't look autistic, or, you know, everyone experiences these things, but we so easily start invalidating ourselves, especially because I think a lot of us tend to invalidate ourselves as baseline. So unless we're really rooted in this diagnosis and feel confident on it, it can be such a mind split to be disclosing this and then to be getting and receiving and validating feedback.
Yeah. Yep. I can actually think about like when I disclosed back in 2021, when I discovered this, I did get a lot of those comments of like, you don't look autistic, or everyone is a little bit autistic. And I'm like, what does looking autistic fucking mean? Like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. I was talking about this the other day, you know, I might've talked to you about it, like how I didn't used to swing my arms when I walked, and coworkers told me I walked like a serial killer, and I never thought about how I walked. I just walked in my mind naturally. And then I realized like through assimilation and potentially like camouflaging, I am now like swinging my arms when I walk. Right. And then I was walking down the road the other day and I'm swinging my arms and I'm thinking to myself, I'm by myself. I'm like, am I swinging my arms because that's natural? Or am I swinging my arms because I've really gone deep in the masking of like, now I have to fit in and present this way. So that's what comes to mind when I'm like, you don't look autistic.
Did you come to a conclusion of why you were swinging your arms?
I have no definitive conclusion to this. I still swing my arms and I still think about it every time I walk, whether or not I'm doing it naturally or if it is because of those comments.
Mm-hmm. And that's also interesting. People weren't saying like that you should swing your arms because you look autistic, or you should smile because you look autistic. They were saying you look like a serial killer. So I think there's different descriptors. Like I think I got a lot of, you always look really serious. So people weren't telling me I looked autistic, but people did make comments about how serious my face was.
Yeah.
And they were just using different descriptors.
Right. And it's just like these little like microaggressions, you know, that people experience of, why do you look so flat all the time? Why are you so intense all the time?
I would love just like a quick comeback of like, because I'm autistic.
Right. Ooh, another t-shirt idea. Write it down.
Because I'm autistic.
Yeah, no, seriously. But that's a lot of our experiences, right? Is like, and I even had this like unfortunate rupture with friend, I guess, who was making comments about like how many people are getting autism assessments right now in schools and how it was so blown out of proportion. And that leads into like, there's an autism epidemic conversation. And I'm like, you're a fucking school psychologist. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And social media plays a role in everything we're talking about, right? Like, because people will see a reel or a clip of someone organizing their fidgets, and someone who maybe is OCD is like, oh, I'm autistic now. Mm. So I think that plays a role in everyone's a little bit autistic. Or people who struggle socially, it's like a similar comparison of social anxiety and autism, right? It's like, well, I also struggle in crowds and I also struggle in like these environments.
Do you mean that you think more, I just want to make sure I'm tracking you right, more people are misidentifying as autistic because they're seeing like one trait of autism on social media? Mm-hmm. And that's part of the everyone's a little autistic
sometimes
experience?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I especially see it with OCD and social anxiety, like those two specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously there's so much overlap as we talk about all the time, but I do think that plays a role in the whole, like everyone has like autistic traits, which I know you're going to talk about in this episode.
Yeah. We'll talk about that at some point. That's interesting because I've not heard you say that before. I think I've heard you lean more on the opposite of like, not being concerned about people self-identifying on social media. Has that shifted for you?
So I have zero problem with people self-identifying and self-identifying via social media as a catalyst whatsoever. I just think there's a comparison with similar struggles that can mirror some autistic experiences to some degree.
Which
can then lead to like the general populace saying like, see, everyone's a little bit autistic. I have zero problem with self-identification. I just want to name that like very explicitly.
I think that's right, because I wanted to like help unpack that of.
Yeah.
But I also think if what I was hearing you say is true, I also do think that's true, but I think it's uncomfortable to say because self-identification is so important, because access to assessments so hard. But there probably are also some people, definitely not the majority, but who do connect to autistic people talking about autistic experiences, but for different reasons, like for OCD, sure. like social anxiety. I think this is my current theory, and I might shift this at some point, but I'm learning a lot about this idea of context. It used to be called context blindness. Peter, I'm blanking on his last name. See, this is why I need to prepare for things I'm going to talk about. I don't know the names. Actually, can I look it up real quick?
I actually found it. Peter Vermeulen?
Yeah. Peter Vermeulen. So, yeah. And he has a new book about, it's more about the prediction map idea of like our brains don't make predictions as well, which actually connects to sensory experiencing and processing. It's really fascinating. Goodness gracious, where was I going with this? Oh, so it used to be called context blindness. That's not a very affirming term for many reasons. More commonly talked about now is like context sensitivity, or Dr. Henderson talks about it as context insensitivity. But it's that idea that we do not intuitively pick up and perceive and experience context. We can analytically do it. And so there's a lot of interesting studies, like some of the classic theory of mind studies, which again, theory of mind's a controversial thing in our history. But one of the things they found in a lot of tests that look at things like context or theory of mind, autistic people can often get the right answer if we're given enough time, which again, we're doing it through a prefrontal cortex. Typically, if we're doing it, we're not just intuitively perceiving and experiencing. To me, if someone doesn't have context and sensitivity, to me, that's the like, again, this is a bold statement. That's the, are you autistic or not? Mm-hmm. If you intuitively perceive context, I don't think you're autistic.
Yeah. Okay. Can you break that down a little bit more as to why? Just for people who are listening and are like, I have no idea what that means.
So it's the whole idea of, so the classic idea of autism being about not picking up social cues, right? Mm-hmm. So picking up context is the idea of, oh goodness. Yeah. I feel like I want to like make notes to be able to synthesize as well. But it's the idea of picking up what is the social bid that's being done here? I'll give an example. Let me give an example. I've probably used this one before, but this was a conversation with Donna Henderson where I asked her, like, what happens to your brain? And we've had her on before where she talks about what it's like to be ADHD, but not autistic. Yeah. So I was like, what happens to you when someone asks what your favorite book is? And she was like, well, it would depend who was asking.
Right.
And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, if it's my neighbor, I would say like probably some fiction book. If it's a coworker, I would say a psychology book. And then I explain what would happen in my brain where I'm like, I'm thinking through all of the books I've ever read. And I'm like, give me more context. What bucket are we talking about? Are we talking about psychology, social? Like give me a bucket to work with. And how that would be a really hard question for me to try to answer what's my favorite.
For sure.
For her, she's responding to the social context of there is a social bid being made with her neighbor. It's not about like, factually, what's your favorite book?
Right.
And so there's a social context that's helping her brain to filter out what information to give her. And she just intuitively says a fiction book. That is not an analytical process for her. She's perceiving the social context, and it's like it creates, the way I think about it is it creates a filter for what information is important to pay attention to. When you don't have that, we're doing our bottom-up processing. Yep. I'm hearing the question, what's your favorite book? I'm not perceiving or experiencing the social context of we're in this, there's a social bid happening, we're in a dynamic, and so I'm going to just answer it as factually and accurately as possible. So that would be an example of someone who has and is experiencing social context in a way that is filtering her brain what information to pay attention to intuitively, not analytically, versus a bottom-up process that doesn't have that context filter to help guide, here's the information that's important to pay attention to here.
I think you broke that down beautifully. It's a great example. Hey, everyone. It's Patrick, one half of Divergent Conversations. Some of you may know that I own a group therapy practice in North Carolina, Resilient Mind Counseling. We specialize in supporting the neurodivergent LGBTQIA+ and Black, Brown, and Asian communities online and across North Carolina. We also have limited in-person openings at our offices in Asheville and Cary. We really love working with clients who are coming to terms with both autism and ADHD discoveries later in life or questioning, as well as the intersections of race, gender, identity, and orientation. All of our therapists have lived experience and identify as ADHD, autistic, or ADHD. Our team of affirming therapists offers a safe, anti-racist, anti-oppressive, inclusive, and accessible space where you can show up exactly as you are. No masking, no judgment, and no need to make eye contact, just real connection and healing. We accept most commercial insurances like Blue Cross Blue Shield, United, Aetna, and MedCost, as well as self-pay options. We currently have openings for new clients, and you can visit our website at resilientmindcounseling.com. And if you would prefer, you can either text or call to get started to our HIPAA-compliant phone line at 828-515-1246. You can also email us at scheduling@resilientmindcounseling.com. So, and then, you know, I'm even thinking about when we had Jennifer on, right? When we had like the Ask a Neurotypical Allistic episode, same situation, right? Like, what's your favorite book? She's going to be like, well, depending on who's asking, I might give this, I might just intuitively give this answer. And I have these buckets and I place people in them naturally. And we're both sitting there like, what the fuck are you talking about? How do you, I think she used the term, I just flow through life.
Yeah, because she has the context perception, or same thing of like how, you know, if you work in an office and it's, okay, what do you talk about at the office? But then what if you have a social event, like a social event at the office, what do you talk about? Knowing like what is quote unquote socially appropriate to talk about in different contexts, that's also part of picking up context. Many of us will analytically learn that. Like, and then that's what I call my Google Doc, like creating the rules, but it's not something that my body just like picks up and knows. And so all of those social norms, like that's all like context. It's also like the flip side of it is where, so Dr. Amara Brooks talks about same idea, but she talks about it, or they talk about it as context independence, which is like, we are just us, no matter what context we're in, which I also like that way of framing it of, because there's deep authenticity with it. So I like that way of thinking about it too, while also acknowledging life would be a lot easier if we were able to just like perceive and experience these things as we shifted through context.
Absolutely. And going back to what you said about a workplace, right? It's also why a lot of autistic people might consider colleagues and coworkers and acquaintances like very good friends, but not receive that in reciprocity when that person's like, we're just coworkers. And you're like, oh, but I'm talking about all of these deep, important things with you in the workplace. It's like, yeah, well, that doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So the context piece, obviously huge, makes a lot of sense. So you would almost use that as like a delineation, like over here or over here.
I would. So I would have a hard time diagnosing someone as autistic if that piece wasn't there.
Right. Yeah.
And it's connected to the bottom up processing. Like it's that feels like a pretty core autistic piece of the experience.
Sure. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So when, again, when that statement is used, okay, everyone is a little bit autistic, but you can naturally synthesize and understand context in these situations, then it sounds like that would fall on the other side of the fence. Like,
yeah,
everyone is a little bit autistic comment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's like, well, if you're able to perceive context and get all that beautiful information that helps you just flow through life, you're not experiencing. Yeah. So I think what people are trying to say, perhaps, but they don't even realize this is what they're trying to say, and this would be an accurate statement, is everyone has autistic traits. Sure. Yeah. True.
Yeah.
But that's not, that is interesting. Okay. Here's how you'd answer this. Everyone has autistic traits. Everyone's a little bit autistic. How are those different statements?
Okay. As I rub some lotion on my tattoo, I internalize them very differently for some reason. I internalize like everyone has autistic traits as like kind of like a, yeah, that makes sense. We all, as humans, throughout this like spectrum and diversity of humanness, all exhibit different traits, and we all have different traits in different environments, and we, you know, those are impacted environmentally and socially and whatever else is going on, neurologically even. Everyone is a little bit autistic. It kind of feels like, you mentioned yesterday, or a couple of weeks ago, whenever we were recording, the importance of the words and that we use and the language that we use, and just really owning that and like protecting it almost.
Mm-hmm.
As if the word autistic stops meaning what it means and it becomes so much more generalized. Do we have disabling conditions? Do we need accommodations? Like, are we really struggling the way that we're struggling? I think it takes some of that away. It kind of feels dismissive of the experience, minimizing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. And that does kind of ruffle my feathers when that happens, both for myself, but also as a parent with some kids that have higher support needs than I do. Like, I do feel protective that word continues to mean something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not just like that, you're not just describing a personality.
Right. Exactly. And that's where I think it leans into, is if we start saying and embracing everyone is a little bit autistic, we're almost looking at autism as personality related struggle in a way.
Mm-hmm. And it's so much more, right? It's a brain body experience. It's the nervous system. It's the context piece. It's the sensory piece. It's the co-occurring health conditions. Yeah. Right.
It's everything. Yeah. It's everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what really can be the most irritating or frustrating of when that statement is used, is just, it's for us, it's like, it's everything. And if it's not everything, if it doesn't impact you in every single like fucking way that we're talking about, it feels really disrespectful to just say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I agree. So I think part of it, that statement, everyone's a little bit autistic, they are talking about the experience, right? Like a felt experience. Everyone's a little bit autistic. And I think that's why that statement is wrong. But we're saying everyone has autistic traits. Like, yeah, that's accurate.
For sure.
And autistic traits does not equal the autistic experience. Like, unless you have struggled to move through neuronormative spaces, either struggled because it literally can't, hard to access, or because you're like bullied and victimized when you do, or because of burnout and masking, unless that is part of your experience. I guess I'd also put that, I feel like that's also in the, if we're drawing a line, that would be in the line of like, are you autistic? Is moving through neuronormative spaces cause distress for you? I mean, if we're getting specific, you know, with the diagnostic criteria, it has to cause impact to functioning. And that could be emotional, of like the emotional turmoil of navigating neuronormative spaces. But it's right. If a person's not experiencing disability around it, Now, I mean, I guess we could get a little bit more nuanced if they're living in really ideal conditions.
Right.
Where they're in an environment that is fully accommodated and it's therefore not disabling. But like outside of creating the perfect ecosystem for an autistic person, if it's not disabling, that'd be another thing where it'd be hard to diagnose the autism.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head, honestly. I think that's exactly it. So the context piece, moving through neuronormative spaces, does it cause significant amounts of distress in area A, B, C?
Yeah.
I think that encapsulates it. And I really do think that there is a very different response, at least for me, and it sounds like for you, of everyone is a little bit autistic over here. Everyone has autistic traits. Those feel very different to me. They just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, should we get into the part where we might disagree a little bit?
Sure.
So this is... I agree. I think that comment, I wish people would stop making it. It's an invalidating comment when people say everyone's a little bit autistic, even if they're not trying to be invalidating. It just lands that way for most of us.
Yeah.
The comeback to it has become the one I see a lot on social media is like, you either are autistic or you aren't.
Right.
And I guess if we're talking about, again, the felt experience, and we've just described some things that might draw that line, that I guess I could kind of agree with that. But the part where I'm like, oh, that doesn't feel literal enough for my brain is like, yeah, but everyone does have autistic traits. And if we were to make a pie chart and a gradient, we'd see people with a lot of autistic traits. I actually see this a lot with ADHDers who have ADHD, have a lot of autistic traits, but they can perceive context.
Right.
But they're having a lot of struggles with navigating neuronormative spaces because of the level of autistic traits. And so it's, well, what do we do with those folks? Like when they hear, well, you're either autistic or you're not. What if you've got 80%, like, you know, what if that you're so close to that threshold, but you're not quite there. And so that's where I don't love that sentence. You either are or you aren't. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think it's just a little bit too simplistic. And then that could be invalidating, I think, for people who perhaps identify with the broader autistic phenotype. And I know that even that idea of the broader autistic phenotype, some people see that as problematic because they're like, well, that's just autistic people who mask. But I look at that and I'm like, well, maybe those are those people that have a lot of autistic traits, but don't quite reach that threshold. So maybe it is helpful to have language for them. So I don't know. That's partly, I think I'm being very literal with it, but that's why I don't love that sentence.
So I don't think this is like as controversial as you're saying when you describe it like that. Because when we were talking the other day, I think we both had different reactions when we were talking about this statement and you kind of went into that, but not in the context that you just gave. And I think when you say it like that, I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. So I don't have much disagreement to that. I do understand why people, especially with maybe more like medium or higher support needs autistics, who are like, stop trying to claim our fucking identities. Like when you say you're not, you know, when we use that black and white terminology of you are autistic or you're not, I think for a lot of people who openly struggle significantly more, they're like, you know, I can't speak for them, but I can understand why that would be a point of contention.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially if it, you know, it's disabling or it's not, right?
Right.
And again, we've talked about this, holding on to it as a disability. And I know there's different opinions on this. I think it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, if, from that framework, absolutely. I also agree with what you're saying of it's important to have some black and white around that.
Yeah.
So maybe go ahead.
I just think it's about protection, you know, like it's about like holding on to something that although creates so much struggle is just a part of who we are at our core. And I think it's hard to relinquish that too.
Yeah. 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 And that gets back to the invalidation and minimizing. It's really minimizing when people say, or even like, that happened a lot with my parenting too. If I was describing like how family holidays were hard or routine changes, I think again, in an empathic misattunement, people may be trying to relate of like, oh yeah, I think family vacations are hard for everyone. It's like, like you don't understand the level of what we're describing here.
It's a great example. Yeah, exactly. Because it would be at its like face value. It's like, yeah, of course, life's hard for everybody. It's like, yeah, it is hard for everybody. And I think there are like tiers of certain things that are significantly harder for some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So
I wonder if an accurate response to that, everyone's a little bit autistic, would be, well, yeah, everyone has autistic traits and the experience of being autistic is pretty distinct. And if a person's not disabled or if they're not struggling to navigate neuronormative spaces, then it can be harmful to say everyone's a bit autistic. Okay, that's way too wordy. That's not actually a good feedback, but something that captures like, yes, everyone has autistic traits and this experience is a distinct experience that not everyone gets a little dose of.
Yeah. 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 I like that. Yeah. I don't have, I think we came into this like, oh, we might disagree on these things, but I don't really disagree with what you're saying. So, it's a good breakdown of a common misconception and statement that is thrown around in a lot of spaces. So I think that wraps that up.
That's a wrap.
Anything else to say?
Okay.
Like, on to the next episode. Yeah.
No, onward and forward.
Unless you have any final thoughts, but I think that was a good final thought.
Yeah. No, I think I feel like we can conclude this conversation, Patrick.
We are the most awkward humans on planet Earth, and it's brought to you on all podcast platforms and YouTube every Friday by JNAP. Use code DCPOD for 2 months off your service. See you next week. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that Neurodivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, freed and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.